See, okay, go
guys,
ahead.
We're live. Stop. Here we go. Where am I at? Well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Cross and the Crescent Discussion Group. This is a Blog Talk Radio weekly program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. We are here every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time and Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. And we're here for about 2 hours a shot. I see the chat is starting to fill up nicely with comments there. XYZ gets on there, and he's just like this hoss that is blasting. And he, I like his emojis there with the music and stuff. So Connie, she did a really good job with the intro. And he does that every week. We got Islam, the Spanish individual. They posted, Estamos crudo es expresión. I'm not going to say it. And then Haril Johnson got the gold star for being first in chat today. So welcome, people. Okay, so, oh man, well, we were having a really good discussion in the pre-show. We were trying to decide what people in Pennsylvania ought to do with their Senate race because of certain people's feelings about Mehmet Muhammad Oz and being a subversive. And then you have a geriatric,
lover of Sharia. Yeah.
Well, then you have a geriatric patient that would what do they call that? Where you conference, not conference. He would support the Democrat. What is that? We call not conference, but when you coalesce. No, that would they anyway. He would be a vote for the Democratic Party and the Democrats controlling the committees in the Senate.
I still think Chucky has a chance of losing New York.
Chucky ain't going to lose New York. Chucky
is. Well, when you look at his opponent, I think there's a chance.
No. I've never seen it. Okay, I might be wrong on that. You might have a great opponent.
Here's the thing, Paul, and what you guys are understanding, Paul, you're voting for the party at this time. You're voting for the body in the seat who is part of the party. And besides, I will have you minded, he was nominated, handpicked by the ultra mega king himself. So,
which
is actually
just shows that mega king is human and not exactly actually, right 100%.
Yeah, that's true. No,
that's the problem. All his picks, they're all losing. Okay, they had much better candidates for the Senate race, but he picked these knuckleheads, and they're all completely losing. They're all doing horrible, except for Herschel Walker in Georgia. There is a real good fighting chance there. It is in a dead heat there. I'm definitely going to focus on that, but I am still going to focus on Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania is a Republican seat, so we can't flip that. We have to maintain that and just to maintain the status quo. But anyway, I just want to comment on this Shrek guy that he's Oz is run against. Do you know, I saw an interview with this guy. He was bragging because he was a mayor before he became lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania. He was the mayor of a small suburb of Philadelphia. It's like 2,000 people, I think. And he was bragging about how he reduced crime, okay, with all these great policies, these lefty policies. Well, I looked it up. No, he took over, okay, in 2014. He was living in his mom's basement, I think, at the time. I'm not making that up. But he took over in 2014. It was a part-time job. And crime shot up for all the years he was in office, except guess what? It went down when he left.
Yeah, I saw that.
Didn't he buy a house from his sister for like a dollar or something?
For a dollar, like a trust fund, baby.
Well,
not just trust fund, but no, they funnel all kinds of money in. Okay.
His family, though, him personally, he's never held a real job. And, you know, okay, so he's running against Dr. Oz, and we want to have him to, Colly, what is the word I'm looking for where you...
You got two idiots running, and it's the worst of two evils. You got to figure out what's the worst and what's the best.
What is it when you join that party, even though you might not agree with everything in the party, but you join the party and you vote for the party in power? That
that's called God's judgment.
Now, Ed, I get that. That's true, but I'm. There's a political term for it, and you would think that I'm slipping. I really am. It's scary. It's not conference. It's something else. It begins with a C.
I'm so glad to know I'm not the only one.
It
Thank
is.
You,
it is
Thank you.
What you're talking about is conference. No, because that's what you do in the party. You become part of a voting block.
It's not a conference, though.
Oh, whatever it is. We know what you're talking about, old man. So be quiet. All right.
It's going to come to me.
How about coalition?
No, it's not coalition. It's something.
Yeah, actually, maybe it is coalition.
They pledge their fealty to the party. Like the abortion thing. Not coalesce. It's just where they would... They may be pro-life, okay? They might be a pro-life Democrat, but yet they were going to vote for the committee members on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and they would vote lockstep with the other members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, even though they would be voting for a pro-choice judge.
There's nothing pro-choice about it. It's pro-death. You're 100%
right. Yeah. it's called something. It's a
Rainbow Coalition. Either way.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. I just, you know, how sometimes you get stuck on something and you just can't let it go, and it keeps on bothering you and bothering you until, you know, you do a Google search or somebody does a Google search for you and then shows you how dementia-ridden that you really are becoming. All right, today, let's get to what today's topic is, for Pete's sake. Today, we're going to continue the Meccan mystery. We've been talking about Mecca for the past 2 weeks, and this is not my material, folks. I'm not claiming to be a wizard or smart here of any stretch of imagination. A lot of it is Jace. Well, a lot of the material from last week was my material, as a matter of fact, but the other material comes from Jay Smith's class out at Veritas University out there in California, and those classes that I had taken with him Dr. Dan Janicek were the instructors for these things, and they're just absolutely phenomenal. And you don't have, if you ever want to take these classes, they make you take some type of pledge that you believe in God. You're a Christian is basically what it is. So if you're a Muslim in disguise, or if you maybe a Buddhist or something like that, trying to sneak into these classes, you know, you could probably get in there. Lie. What do they call that? Halal? What's that word that Lloyd used on the show?
Taqiyya.
Yeah, it's taqiyya, but it's a more... Taqiyya is kind of a nuanced form of it.
Hiyal.
Yeah,
that's pronounced. Hiyal. Yeah.
Where she gets deceived. Do everything you can deceive the Catherine in the truth coming out about the Sharia. It's more encompassing over the Sharia, because when you start reading some of the stuff that is in the Sharia that this guy was talking about, it just absolutely will disgust you. And I know, I get it. You know, a lot of Muslims say, well, I don't believe that. Because we had one in Clubhouse the other day. He goes, I don't believe that. That's right. I would never do that. And you know okay. what? We trust that you would never do that. And the reason why is because you have a higher sense of morality than what your 7th century prophet did.
Well, the people that understand Sharia the best, we know them as ISIS today. And that's no joke, my friend.
Well, I would say they attempted to fully implement it.
Well, I would agree.
And,
I would agree
to trying to continue to implement it.
I would agree to the same, because a lot of people, you know, when you ask Muslims, say, "Well, the Islam that ISIS practiced isn't Islamic." Okay, and if you're a Muslim and you believe that you're perfectly allowed to believe that. You know, it's just like saying, "Okay." The Christians who went on the Crusades were not practicing Christianity. So the question then would be, to the Christians going on the Crusades, well, what part of Christ's teachings are you using to justify your actions on the Crusade? Around and use that same argument against Muslims. Which part of what ISIS is doing is not Islamic according to the Sharia, according to...
My question is... What is ISIS doing that Muhammad didn't do?
That's my point. What point of the Sunnah aren't they following? And they can't tell you, or they'll try to bring in new.
Did Muhammad own slaves? Did he sell them? Did he steal from others? Did he kill people as a result of stealing?
Check.
Was he a raider? Did he marry a six-year-old and bed her at the age of 9? These check. Are all. And was ISIS doing this? Oh,
check.
Yeah, and that's
the only difference between an ISIS Muslim and a Muslim who follows Kenny Islam is that the ISIS Muslim is doing what Kenny fantasizes about.
Hey, Radical, your car alarm is going off, bro.
It's not my car alarm. Car? Stealing, no,
the neighbor. Let it go. That's not a big deal.
Not my business. Dude, hey, you learn quick in Chi-Rock, dude. You don't pay attention, dude. It ain't my crap. Hey, none of my business, dude. You know, yeah, that's how you get shot. I'm just saying. You learn that real quick. But no, seriously, the only difference between an ISIS Muslim and a westernized Muslim is that the ISIS Muslim is doing what the westernized Muslim fantasizes about. In other words, the ISIS Muslim is going to oppress and kill you today, whereas the westernized Muslim says, oh no, we're not going to do that today. We're going to do that sometime in the future, like tomorrow. And I'm sorry, I can't have somebody over for dinner and they're saying, yeah, you know, I'm going to, you know, be friends with you now, but when Sharia law comes, not so much no more. You know what I mean? There are actually, you know, I remember reading reports in Iraq and what was the other one where they had the Yazidis or whatever. They're like, you know what? It just changed overnight. And you can look at this in Nazi Germany as well. It just changed immediately overnight. These are families. They had barbecues together. They celebrated their children's birthdays, their anniversaries. These were neighbors, families, and friends. And then all of a sudden, ISIS came to town, and it was not anymore. You know what I mean? It's overnight, dude. All of a sudden, no. You're the other, and we got to get rid of you. And it was just shocking.
Another example of the Rwanda genocide. That was overnight.
Exactly. Well, you can go with Nazi Germany. Same deal. These were Jews. They were intermarried. You know, in a lot of cases, they intermarried. And all of a sudden, no. Everybody turned on them just overnight. I mean, if you give over to that kind of level of depravity, forget about it. You know what I mean? And Islam institutionalizes that forever and ever because it's Allah's eternal words.
And we're talking not about... And people need to understand this is not talking about Muslims as much as it's talking about the ideology of Islam. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, Muslims may have a quote differing belief, which Eric has expressed, but the ideology of Islam doesn't allow for the differing beliefs is what it comes down to. Now, read Sharia, you'll see it's actually written there. You cannot have a differing belief.
Yeah, what else is really interesting is Allah's eternal word didn't show up until 632 AD. What's up with that?
Okay, I'm sorry, guys. I'm kind of wow. In the. I keep going. I'm sorry. We didn't show up until 32 AD. Ed, would you say?
No. I'm saying Allah's eternal word did not show up until 632 AD. Well, I'm just saying around the death of Muhammad, and I'm giving them credit on that because really we don't have a Quran that dates back to then. So really it's more like into the 8th century. But if Allah's word is eternal, why can't we find it anywhere else behind that, earlier than that? Where is it if his word is eternal? Anybody?
It's in the Injil.
I think it's the Bible. But then they said we
what?
We messed
up. Whoa. Wait a minute. So you can match verses from the Quran to the Bible?
Not really. But
well, you can see it's in the Injil. I didn't say Bible. I said the Injil.
Oh, okay. What's the Injil, Eric? See what I mean?
Well, it's a book given to Jesus.
Yeah, that nobody knows where it is, and they don't have a manuscript of it. And they don't have
no idea. There's no corroborating factors behind.
Yeah,
the,
there's no evidence for it.
Quran.
So that's why I just push all that aside. And no matter how hard they try to push that narrative to try to distract you from what I'm telling you, they can't do it. It's fallen so far into the cracks now that, you know,
there's
the rest of the world's seeing
a Facebook
it for what
group
it is.
Called Islam is Dying, and I suggest everybody to join that. You'll have a good laugh every once in a while, and I keep putting up there every once in a while. You know, Muhammad must not be an important guy to Islam. He's only mentioned four times. What does that say about? Yeah. What does that say about
him? Islam was never alone.
Even Isa, their concept of Jesus is mentioned more than Isa, more than Muhammad. I mean, even Abraham. I mean, you can't. There's so many things mentioned more than Muhammad. Muhammad is so unimportant. That's it.
Yeah, but Islam was never alive.
It's never alive. It's full of. I don't know what's. If you can.
Islam it's satanic. Death, it's murderous. It's sexual.
It's
filth.
It lives through people, but it's death through people more than life.
Yeah, it's sending them to the fire, left and right.
What's happening to it today is this right here, where average people can come together and have discussions about it. Average people can access information about it. It's the truth. The a lie cannot stand the light of truth. And when you are able to shine a light on it in open form such as this, if they continue to be open and you can discuss it. You're exactly right. This is where you're going to start seeing that that avalanche of apostasy, and we see quite a bit of the rates of apostasy have exponentially grown in Islam, and it's because Muslims, the practicing Muslims, it really isn't what we're saying. Maybe in part, but I mean, the practicing Muslims now have access to their own writings, and they can easily access a lot of these things from the Hadith and see what Muhammad did. They can access the Sharia right there online. They can go find people on YouTube that will describe what the Tafsir say as far as explaining what it says in the Quran, and they're horrified. And they dig and they dig, and then finally they dig themselves out of it. It's having this access to information, and education is the great equalizer. That's Horace Mann. Oh, by the way, Horace Mann is anyway.
He's the founder of American Education, the father of American Education. All right.
Say it again, because I think people heard, at least when I first heard it, I heard Horace Mann, not Horace Mann.
Horace Mann, who's the father of American education, once said that education is the great equalizer. It makes the playing field equal for everybody.
Yep.
So if you get a quality education, you're going to have an even playing field. If you don't get a quality education, what's that?
Right now, I consider it piss poor education, unfortunately.
Well, we were talking about that too before the show. You know, the need for educators across this country today, it's just crazy who they're putting. That's a bad word. They're hiring into the classroom. The lack of qualified teachers is just, it's just not, it, there's just, it's like a funnel. You know, you got to have more people up here coming into this education system in college to where you get teachers dropping out at the bottom. And if you don't, there's just not enough people, number one, going into the funnel. For the simple reason is that they're making it way too tough to become a teacher. I mean, if you look at the number of courses that you have to take on top of your cognate courses, your core courses, whatever your major is, it's crazy. Now, if you're teaching maybe at the elementary school level, you know, you get a degree in education and teach at the elementary level, you don't have to specialize in anything. But when you start talking about what they require you to do, I mean, you got to go to school for 5 years. And if you're talking about $50,000 a year for tuition, teachers don't make that much money. So how in the heck are you going to pay?
That's the big scam. I was told teachers don't make any money, but now I'm looking, you know, your situation, read the Axios thing. Come on, dude.
Eric's had two careers, but that's not factually fair.
You get a big chunk of change, dude. Seriously.
Well, that's the thing. They're calling teachers back. This is what they're paying bonuses to teachers to come out of retirement to teach, and you can still draw your retirement.
I haven't seen that in this state. But I've heard about it.
You need to move to Iowa, dude. Dude, you haven't read. You don't know what. Oh my God, dude. No. Well, I can tell you off here, but you can read the Axios article. Yeah, we don't want to give out too much information, but yeah, pretty much, it's a big chunk of change.
It's crazy what they're doing, it isn't just Iowa. I mean, it's all across the country where they're. It's just, and you don't have to be a wizard of smart. I mean, but you have to have a love and a
clearly not
the one for your kid. I know. Okay. Whatever. But can you have to have a love for kids. What's that, Darcy?
I think we should hire a Jabril. You know, cause he squeezes people so they read.
Read. Okay, got
and
you,
still he couldn't read. Yeah, but still he couldn't read.
That's funny.
Jeez.
Oh man, look at we've been on the air for 30 minutes already, 23 minutes, and we haven't got to the topic. I gotta focus. I gotta remember what that word is too, and it's not conference. It's something else.
Is it compromise? No, it's not compromise, is it, sir?
You are
I'm going to leave it alone.
Gosh, and it's going to come to me just as soon as
you know what? You'll remember it towards the end of the show. Just go on.
I will. And do your thing. And then everybody go, hey, look at that guy. He ain't got dementia after all.
It sounds like you're trying to say like chaperone, but I know that's not the word you're thinking.
It's not chaperone. It's where they All right, let's get this.
That's what they say when they kiss a black stone, anyway.
Okay, so Mech and Mystery, we have been talking about this for the past 2 weeks. Let's take a look and see what we discussed here so far. Whoops, I'm gonna put this back up here. Okay, thus far, we have discussed the problem with the sources and how the sources, when we start talking about the Hadith, we talk about the biography, the Sirah literature, We talk about the Tacruth, which is the histories, how it does not, how it is written much, much later after the death of Muhammad, compiled in 870. I think Bukhari is the earliest one of the Hadith compilers. Muhammad died in 632. So you're talking almost 2.5 centuries after the death of Muhammad. The Sira, or his biography, is not written until 100 years, supposedly, and this is the way the story goes, by Ibn Ishaq. And even then, we don't have anything from Ishaq. We have Ibn Hisham, and his was written down 200 years after the death of Muhammad. And then we also have the other sources where they come in, you know, well after 200-300 years after Muhammad. And the earliest extant manuscripts that we have from these jokers is 400 years after the death of Muhammad. So the sources, you have problems, all kinds of problems with the sources. The origins prior to the 7th century, they're all Islamic sources. There are no sources that describe a pre-7th century. What's that, Ed?
They're non-existent.
Exactly. Well, yeah, there's nothing there. It's like a black hole. And then we looked at the origins of Islam last week. And I don't think we've gotten to the origins of the Quran yet, and we're going to put it all together. All right. So what I want to start with is the Qiblas. This is archaeology, folks. In archaeology, there really isn't a lot of interpretation that you can put into this type of archaeology, where you dig up old mosques, ancient mosques, and you look at some of the characteristics of them. You see what the type of architecture that they had. You can look at, you know, to see whether they had the, you know, I was not, you guys ever take one of those art appreciation courses in college? It was like a mandatory. It seemed like
I did.
Yeah, you have to art appreciation, art and architecture appreciation. And you learn all these different types of architecture, Baroque and Greek, and you know how they built these arches and the pedestals and the pillars and the capstones, whatever they call them things. You learn all about that kind of stuff. Well, with architecture and stuff, you know, you look at what, you know, what's on the ground around your dig site, and you can pretty much tell what was built there, how it was built, what era it was built in, and all those things. And they have they've done this to many of the mosques that they know are ancient. Let me get my laser pointer up here. Okay, so when we look at Dan Gibson, hold on, let me plug Dan Gibson here, just so you all know. Dan Gibson wrote this book right here, Early Islamic Qiblas, and a lot of this material comes from Dan Gibson's book, and he has the photographs, the aerial photographs, the directions in which these Qiblas face, and he clearly shows that these Qiblas from these early mosques don't face Mecca, even though Allah changed the direction of their prayer from Jerusalem. And what year was that? 629, 627, somewhere around there. I don't know. And those Qiblas were supposed to be the direction of prayer. Well, if all of the earliest mosques, which were built after Muhammad, don't face Mecca, they face another direction, there might be a problem with your narrative. And you can't go back. Here's what's startling. Because when we look at the manuscript evidence, for example, the Sana manuscript, the Sanya manuscript is a palimpsest manuscript, meaning that you have an underwriting there. There was something that was on that animal hide that it's written on prior to what you can read, meaning that what was on there, they washed off, and then they wrote over it. That's a palimpsest. And what we find in the underwriting there is different than what we find on the overriding. And it looks like what they've done is they've changed the overriding to conform with this modern day idea of what Islam should be. The problem with that is that we know what was under there, that we know that it's different. So we know that it was changed. Now, was it changed significantly? No, not really. But could it have been changed just enough to make modifications in where these kiblas face. And Dan Gibson in what's that movie he made? The Sacred City. I can remember that. Look at that. I can remember that. He made the movie The Sacred City. He shows, and we've had John Isaac on here, who is an Arabic speaker and can write Arabic fluently. We've had Adam Seeker on here, who's an Arabic speaker and can write Arabic fluently. We've had Usama Dakduk on here, who can write Arabic and speak Arabic fluently. But Adam Seeker and John Isaac both have confirmed that in order to change the first letter in the name of Mecca, if it had been, let's say it had, it, they believe it was Becca, which is the Valley of Weeping, which could mean it was Petra, getting to that here in a minute. All you have to do is add, not take away, not wash off, but add like a circle on the end of one of the letters. And in doing so, it changes it from Becca to Mecca. And it's that easy.
And if you look at the Sana, it doesn't have the vowelization markings on it like Arabic has today.
The diacritical marks, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we know that. And here's the here's the best part of the Sana manuscript is the carbon 14 dating, the radiometric dating that was done on using the carbon 14 isotope. They dated it to 2 centuries prior to. to the seventh century, so it was the Quran before the Quran. They have dates as early as like 388 was the earliest date that they had come on. It's just incredible the how the carbon 14 demonstrates that this is an older manuscript than what the narrative, the standard is the sin, the standard Islamic narrative shows. So let's
even more scary than that, Eric. Is that they even think now that it could...
They think now what, Ed?
It could have been church hymns.
Yeah.
Hymns of the early church.
I have that book. Let me see here. Hold on. Here it is. I haven't gotten to it. Hold on. Wait a minute. I'm coming. Come here, book. Is this the book that you're talking about, Ed?
Oh, that's one of them. I have that one.
Hold on. Wait a minute. And this one.
Yes, sir. There you go. Okay.
All right. Those are two of them that I have not gotten to yet.
There's a third one.
What is it? What's the third one? I need to get that one.
The Syro-Aramaic reading of the Quran.
Syro-Aramaic reading.
That's a very important
the
one.
Quran. All right. I'll look that one up. All right. Sorry, guys. I was, what do we say? The moon was split. Yeah. We have clear evidence that the moon was split. So that part of the Quran is true. NASA has. NASA has pictures, don't you see?
Where? I haven't seen one.
Would you like the website to that? Yeah, I can send it to you now.
Hold on, you silly cowards. NASA, dude, I met David Wood at the ISNA conference in Chicago many years ago. I used to have this video where I recorded this dude talking about this, actually saying this, that the moon was split and NASA sent men to the moon to verify this, and Neil Armstrong saw them where the moon was split, and he heard the Adhan, the call to prayer, over his speakers right when the moon was over Mecca, and he converted to Islam, and NASA's been covering that up. You guys know that on NASA's official website, Neil Armstrong, this is 9/11, Neil Armstrong had his own letter saying, no, I'm a Methodist, was born a Methodist, and I will die a Methodist. I did not convert to Islam. And not only that, but also on NASA's official website, because they were asking, they got this blog part, or they had, but they were asking, oh, is it true? Blah, blah, blah. And these scientists, these bloggers on NASA's official blog site, no, it's not. There's no splitting of the moon.
I just put the link for the NASA website into the chat. here on StreamYard. On
the dark side.
Yeah. let me look at this. Is this something that we can look at here? Let's see here. Okay, so solar system exploration. Is this what you're talking about, Ed?
Yes, sir.
Put it up on the screen. Okay, but I'd like to go more detail. The website, what does it say? My recommendation is to believe everything, is not believe everything you read. Peer review papers are the only scientifically valued sources or valid sources of information. And so, did you know only 12 people have ever walked on the moon? Okay, what is this? What's your okay? Is this what it is here?
No,
NASA
you,
might put a huge
no. Need to go back up and what read that article.
Which
back
article?
Up and read that article. That article right there. Right there. Read that.
Can
evidence
you,
of the moon having been split. You need to read that article right there.
Oh, okay. Oh, this is the NASA website. I thought you were thinking this was a Muslim website. Oh,
no,
okay. Well,
NASA,
yeah. I mean,
dude.
Okay. Well, why would they? I mean, how? Why would you feel it necessary to print an article? I mean, it would be the equivalent of saying, you know, for like the National Academy of Sciences or something like that, saying people do not come back from the dead. That would be that. That would be the. You know, why would you feel compelled to do something like that?
Well, they were getting a lot of emails at this time, and this is why they felt like
dated 2009.
Yeah, they needed to. This is why they. This is Obama's time, so you know.
Oh, yeah.
This is why they felt like they needed.
Well,
to
this
that
is.
Out.
Is it, was this the same Joker who thought it was necessary to NASA's mission was to go out and not promote Islam, but
no.
They had no. They this had a is, NASA under Obama.
This, if you
said
read
that,
this,
that was his job was to promote. Was it? I don't know if it's promote Islam
okay.
or make Muslim feel better about their religion or something.
But I'm telling you, if you read this, what you did, it says, my recommendation is not to believe everything you read on the internet.
Yeah.
Right?
Eric,
you know?
you're missing it. This Muslim wrote in, I'm bragging, or bragging and actually stating a fact that it was split, that Allah split the moon and that NASA made the discovery. And these dudes are responding back to you like, no, you're a moron.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Okay.
Now NASA is covering up. You know, they just can't tell the truth.
No, it's not. I don't see that. No, this isn't NASA covering it up. This is NASA.
No, that's what the Muslims are saying. That's what I'm saying. Now the Muslims are saying that NASA's covering things up. We covered things up about Muhammad being in the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
Now they're attacking NASA. You know, it's ludicrous.
Now that NASA's not backing them up, it
they're
was lying. Okay, but now it's not because NASA's actually telling the truth, and we can't have that. And but
you know,
NASA
to them,
saying,
everybody lies, and they tell the truth, but they
NASA
can't prove nothing.
Their point. This is NASA stating their position. No, the moon was never split, ever.
Yeah, because then it doesn't say that Allah brought the moon back together. If the moon was split, then it would be in two right now. Come on, people.
If it had been and NASA had the proof, come on, guys. Don't you think they'd be showing us that? Of course
they would. Well, okay, didn't NASA prove that also that Joshua's longest day made the sun stand still? Have you guys seen that? Those articles out there, too?
Yes.
Okay. Did NASA feel compelled to address that, too?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I do know that.
I remember that being covered in planetariums when I was much younger.
I've seen the articles about that. So I guess it goes both ways, too. You know,
they've run the models, and they've definitely said that Mars passed. There's a model that shows where Mars passed within 70,000 miles of the Earth, which would have caused the Earth to have that long day. And Chuck Missler has a video on that. If you go and watch Chuck Missler, I want to say the 24 24 hours or something of the Bible. I forget exactly the name of the series, but it's in that series. And I want to say it's in the sixth video of that series where he talks about that.
Well, take a look.
I'll go hunt.
I made a note here. Chuck missed one. I know who he is. I like that guy. All right. So we haven't gotten to the topic yet because I keep allowing myself to get sidetracked here. Way to go, Caffer. Let's back over here to the Kiblas again. Let's go back to Dan Gibson's Kiblas ideas. Okay. So we have, he's just doing four Kiblas, but there's a lot more than four Kiblas out there where, they just do not face the right direction. And this is what Dan, is pointing out. You have the sauna, mosque, you have a Medinan mosque, you have the one clear over the Guangzhou mosque, clear over here in China. You know, you have all kinds of mosques whose Qiblas do not face Mecca, but they face Petra. And all of these Qiblas face Petra up to 706. And not one of these mosques, not one of these mosques that were built from 632 or whenever they started building mosques, even before that, all the way up to 706, face Mecca. None of them. You would think that all of them, the earliest Muslims, being the, you know, rightly guided caliphs, would know which direction to build their mosque towards. You would think that the Umayyads would definitely know what the heck they were doing. But no, none of them face Mecca. That is problematic. If your whole faith system, when you start looking, think about this for just more than 3 seconds, okay? If the one thing that you have to do, the five things that you have to do every single day to practice your religion, I'm not talking about making Hajj to Mecca. I'm not talking about fasting during Ramadan. I'm not talking about giving zakat once a week, twice a week, or whatever. I'm talking about praying five times a day towards one direction. And that direction is this Kaaba, this rock in the middle of the Arabian desert. And that isn't the right direction. You got a problem. Because if those earliest Muslims were facing Petra, then your literature's wrong. Somebody has changed your literature. Somebody has changed something. And you have to be able to demonstrate. You have to come up with some type of rescuing device. You would have to come up with some type of manuscript evidence demonstrating that, hey, well, this was changed here because so-and-so said so. You have to be able to provide something. But you just can't say, well, those other mosques are wrong, because they're not. Archaeology does not lie. You can go back and change manuscripts. You can go ahead and reinvent hadith to conform to your political ideas and your evolving historical narrative, but you're not going to be able to change the archaeology. And that's what Gibson has done. This is why Gibson's work is so critically important to understanding the absolute black hole that exists there in Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
And you know what? You know why this even came about?
No, you know, tell why? Me. Why?
It's because of Daniel. In the book of Daniel, we see him opening up his windows at night when he's praying, mm-hmm. when he starts praying to God, and he turns towards Jerusalem.
Right.
He faces Jerusalem. That's the only place we see this going on.
And, in the Old Testament?
Yes, sir.
I mean, that's in the book of Daniel.
Yep. Well, what I'm saying is that that's the only place where it mentions people praying towards Jerusalem.
That's
not in
we
Jeremiah,
that.
Or it's not in those other ones.
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, it.
Well, I'm not second guessing it. I'm just trying to think of, you know, that's a critically important place. That's a critically important association, because if you're going to say Daniel, faced Jerusalem, you know, because he was. They carried off to battle. This is the Babylonian captivity thing, mm-hmm. and they're remembering their fathers, how they prayed, facing a direction. Okay, so Muhammad, when he initially starts off, they're facing Jerusalem, and then when he learns that the Jews thinking mm-hmm. that he's full of crap, he's like, okay, well, we got a new Qibla. Guess what? We're gonna face this direction, and they sticking it to the Jews.
Yeah,
but
so
I think that would be a great like little research project. Somebody could try to Google and see if they find any direction of prayer for the Jews. I'm not doubting what you're saying, but I would think that something that important, some kind of practice like that, religious practice, like maybe Ezra,
even
Nehemiah,
even
or something.
Even today, where do the Jews go to pray?
You're right. When we went to Israel, we stayed with the Jewish family for a couple of days, and the family would pray in, because we were in what's the name of that town? Gosh, I can't remember. Bet Shemesh. We were in Bet Shemesh, and Jerusalem. I can't remember which. I think Jerusalem's north of there, and they would go out there and they pray facing the same direction. Every morning. Okay, let's jump back on this wagon here. Let's go back to the between mosque or between kiblas. And these are kiblas that point in, let's see, how did this work out? Some kiblas then point between Petra and Mecca. And this goes on from 706 to 772. So it isn't really Mecca they're praying towards, they're not praying towards Petra, they're going someplace in between to where they don't want to be committed to one, the Umayyad Caliphate or the Abbasid Caliphate at any one time. So they would build their mosque where they would face a point in between both of those directions. And then finally, they start facing Mecca, and this is where almost 100 years. It's almost Muhammad dies in 632, folks. Remember, follow the timeline here. And these Qiblas, the earliest one that we found, and that doesn't mean that there's, let's kind of back up here a little bit. I'm getting ahead of myself. These are the only Qiblas that we found. This doesn't mean that there weren't mosques out there that did not face Mecca prior to 727. I want to make sure everybody understands that, because this is how scholars, I'm not calling myself a scholar, but this is how scholars get themselves in trouble. They say there isn't any mosque out there that faced Mecca in 720 before 727, and the next thing you know, they find a mosque that does, and it faces Mecca in 726 or something, and then they got egg on their face. Oh, see, he's discredited. He didn't. And this is how archaeology and this is how science is done. It's just that there's nothing here now demonstrating that any Qibla faced Mecca almost 100 years after the death of Muhammad. None.
This is done by satellite, by the way.
Right. Yeah. And we're getting to the direction, how they determined the direction, because he was accused of using Google Earth as his source for that. And he said, he used Google Earth. He doesn't need to take into account the curvature of the earth and all. Shut your pie holes. I mean, it's sick how desperate these guys are. It really is how sick they are, or desperate they are. What I am saying.
Can you see those dates again? Because he died at 632.
Okay, Muhammad,
and this one goes Muhammad up died. To 800. Can we see that?
Yeah.
Okay. 727 to 876. That's a lot more than 100 years.
Right.
Yeah,
okay. So, but the
glad
other
to
mosque.
Show them, I'd be more see? Than glad to show them the verse that talks about the flat earth. Flat.
Yeah, that's another subject.
Not round,
another subject.
Okay, so let's begin at number one here. The earliest Qiblas, all of the earliest Qiblas up to 706, mosque built prior to 706, face Petra. And they don't find any of them facing Mecca. So all of those earliest mosques that they find up to 706, which is 68 plus 74 years after the death of Muhammad, face Petra, which is north. Petra is in Jordan. It's right next. It's in the area where the Dead Sea is where Petra is, a little bit south of that. Then you have a shift in the mosque, or the Qibla direction, where it moves away from Petra and faces in between Mecca and faces in Petra. So it's like there's shift. You have this shift in allegiances. And this goes on from 706 to 772. So you have the new mosque erected after 706. They're not facing Petra, but they're not facing Mecca either. They're facing in between. And this goes on for almost 70 years. this goes on.
They're going clockwise from Petra now to all those areas. So they're going clockwise. And then finally.
Then finally, 727 is the first example, like I was saying, the first example, almost 100 years, 95 years after the death of Muhammad. We finally have, after the death of Muhammad, follow that timeline, folks. 95 years after the death of Muhammad, we finally have a mosque that we have excavated, or that has been excavated, that faces Mecca.
How come he's got the date to 876?
Because these are the mosques that are on the picture here were built.
Okay, I got you.
I'm not sure which one is the earliest one. And which one is the latest one, but that's the date range for the mosque that he has on here. And it shows that these older mosques in the earliest times of the beginnings of Islam finally do start facing Mecca. Now, and also keep in mind, let me back up here. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. What else is taking place in 876? Does anybody remember this from last week?
No.
2 weeks ago?
876?
876. This is where you have the hadith collections finally being compiled. This is Bukhari, Muslim, Al-Nasi, Abu Dawood, Tirmidhi. All these guys start compiling their
lies.
Their hadith, their narrations. Okay. They start compiling their narrations. So here you have the end of that and the beginning of the hadith collections being canonized is not a proper word, but it works in this case. Okay, so number four here. Let's go here. Okay, and then you have parallel mosques. And these are guys that are like sticking it to the man. They're like, okay, look. And I'll clear over here in Spain. We're going to go from a mosque. If you were to have a mosque that was in Petra, going to Mecca, that would be like 150 degrees. If you're going to shoot an azimuth from Petra to Mecca, maybe 160. Let's see, this would be 180, maybe 160, 170 degrees. Okay. So these mosques built their qiblas facing the same direction of 100. Let's say this is 170 degrees on a compass. Okay. These mosque qiblas are facing 170 degrees. This one, so they call them the parallel mosques. And the parallel mosques were built 100 years after the death of Muhammad, all the way up to 866. And this is right before they start compiling all those hadith collections. This is right before Bukhari, Sahih Muslim, all these guys start putting their hadith collections together. Okay, so
that's busted right there. I'm sorry, that's just busted.
What, as far as putting the timeline on top of all that?
No, I'm sorry, but the direction that they're pointing, that's major busted.
Well, yeah, of course it is.
Near Mecca.
Yeah, and what is the rescuing device for this? And I've talked to Muslims about this before. I've had some pretty productive, coherent conversations with them before. And here's what they're saying. Here's what they're saying. They're saying that those Qibla directions, what's the niche in the wall called? Is it called a Qibla? It's not called a Qibla. What's the niche in the wall called, which indicates the direction of prayer? Where they build this thing in the wall.
What you're talking about.
I can't remember what they call it. It's just like every other word that I've been trying to think of today. It's just not coming to me. It's
way off.
Yeah. Anyway, they're facing Petra to begin with. And then what they do is they face in between. And then what they do is they face in a parallel direction. Now, there are a few of them, not all of them. There's no consistency here. Here's the biggest problem. There's no consistency here. There's not this, and this is one of their arguments. They say, well, Islam at this time was not a monolithic belief system. One of the core tenets of your faith system is not monolithic. This is like saying Christians don't believe that Jesus is the Son of God. This is like when we pray, the Lord's Prayer, Our Father who art in heaven. You play something different, like, oh, Jesus, our second God. And, you know, that it would be different. So okay, to say so that this is not monumental, this is not a tsunami of Mithrab. There we go. XYZ. Look at that. You guys are Einsteins there. Mithrab. That's actually, what it's called.
That's actually probably the worst argument I've ever heard.
There's worse. There's even worse ones. They didn't know how to determine direction as accurately back then.
Yeah, right. And
like, dude, if you get out in the middle of the Arabian Desert and you don't know how to determine the direction in which to travel,
yeah, if you don't,
you'd be dead. You're gonna make the Darwin Awards real quick. You're gonna remove yourself from the gene pool. You don't have to worry about building a mosque because you're dead.
And they pointed Petra fine, right? And they pointed Damascus and all those areas just fine.
Well, they pointed
doesn't hold water.
Well, this is what Dan Gibson is putting together, because if you remember, mm-hmm. there's a passage in the Quran where Muhammad, and there's all kinds of things in the Quran. When we look at this book, getting this book down for the show again, Quranic Geography. When you start looking at all the features that are outlined in the Quran and the geographical descriptions of these things, they describe Petra. And what I was going to go with on the verses, remember the satanic verses where it talks about Muhammad, said to pray to the three cranes, Alat, Manat, and Aluza.
Chapter 53.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Those names are the gods and the goddesses of the Nabataeans. So when you start putting all this together, especially with the Quranic Geography, when he starts describing the type of soil, he starts describing they have trees in Petra, they have grass in Petra, they have olive trees. There you go. I was just getting to that. You have all of these things that fit Petra, but not Mecca. And then you combine that with the fact that these Qiblas are facing the wrong direction. They're just not a little bit off here. You know, maybe you could be a degree or two off and you'd be all right. Okay. I would agree with that. But you are talking about huge errors made by people who were serious about their religion, that knew that you had to pray in this certain direction. It was laid out in the Quran. You pray this direction. I am changing your Qibla to one, I can't even remember what the verse is, but they were commanded, if God tells you to change your Qibla, to change your direction of prayer, and you are pointing in the wrong direction of prayer, did he hear those prayers for almost 100 years? You praying in the wrong direction? Or is there something wrong with your history, something wrong with your story? And all of this information, all of this thing converges on the fact that Mecca didn't exist in the 7th century. Mecca is a fabrication. The 7th century Mecca is a fabrication of the Hadith literature, period. Let's get back to the slideshow.
But go ahead. It's a real thing of Revelation 17.
When are you ever going to get to
this? I'm getting there, bro. I'm getting there.
You need to quit your job and get this together.
But it's for sure. It's Revelation 17. All right.
You knew I was going to call you out on that, too. Okay. So let's look at what we got going on here. Okay. So all the Qiblas were facing towards Petra until 706. There was a confusion for the next 100 years, whether it was supposed to be a parallel in between, or was it actually supposed to be Mecca? That goes on for 100 years. 17 of the earliest Qiblas face Petra. 8 of them are between. 10 face Mecca, and 6 are parallel. So the Qiblas were not finalized until 876. That's 250 years after the death of Muhammad. You do not have a standardization of the direction of prayer for 2.5 centuries.
I got to chime in here. You said, don't you know? That pretty much sums it up. Don't you know? that Islam, okay, had not yet invented the miracle of the compass and land navigation yet. You see, it wasn't until the Muslims and Islam invented the compass. Oh, XYZ, don't come to me with your silly kafir.
But it was algebra. It was algebra, right?
It's so perfect timing. Thanks, XYZ.
They had invented the miracle of Islam had not come to fruition with all the wonderful miracle sciences, like the compass, the triangle, the what do you call it, the square, and the wheel. And all those wonderful things, you know, soup. Yeah, they invented soup too. And all those wonderful things. So therefore, that's why they didn't know what direction to pray. Okay? So you're not getting it. You're not getting the big picture. This stuff took time. You know, plus look at where these mosques were. Were these mosques, okay, were they in Arabia? No, these were Jews. They had to be Jews that converted to Islam. So they didn't know which way they were praying. No, that they had to be infidel kafirs somehow. They didn't know which way they were praying. It wasn't until Islam in all of its beauty corrected them. See, they had to correct them, you know, after they invented everything to show them, you know, and the satellites, you know, because you had to have that. So, yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Eric, you know what they might have called that math? Al-Jabril.
Algebra.
Yeah, I posted Jabril. Something in here. I posted something in
there's
here.
There's a okay.
The origin of algebra.
I can't even pronounce this guy's name. Look at what this guy wrote. Now this makes sense. How do you pronounce that?
Villainous. Villainous.
Okay. If the Quran details the change in direction, then the Quran was written after the change in Qibla direction. Well, we agree with that. I agree with that. It was, well, wait a second. Okay, I see what you're saying. If it was prescribing a previous direction and then it changes that, well, they call that abrogation. So that's another rescuing device of Muslims, is it's been abrogated. It's been changed to a different direction. I Al-Jabril, man, that's pretty good.
Al-Jabril. Yes, Al-Jabril.
Yeah.
XYZ.
Okay. Okay, so let's look at where Islam was in the 7th century. So when we start talking about the 7th century, we're talking about the time of Muhammad. We're talking about his lifetime. Where was Islam at this time? Let's start this. Okay. And let's go ahead and look at Muhammad. Now, this is a... I'm doing more and more reading on this, and more I am convinced, I'm becoming more and more convinced, and I hate to say this without wearing my tinfoil hat, but I'm becoming more and more convinced that the historical Muhammad that we find in Islam is a fabrication.
Yes.
The more that you look at the sources for describing his life, the things that he did, where he was located, you have to conclude based on the lack of evidence. Because when we discussed last week how archaeology corroborates the story of civilizations, how you have to have, you know, if you go into Jerusalem and they were going to say that there was a sheep gate in Jerusalem and you go to excavate that part of Jerusalem and there's no sheep gate, then the credibility of the Bible goes in the crapper. The same thing with the Pool of Bethesda, the same thing with all these other locations that are described in the New Testament and the Old Testament. If they're not there, then the veracity of the Bible is called into question. And what is so great about the Bible is you just don't even have to go to Jerusalem, which is mentioned over 2,000 times in the Bible. You can go other places that it hits right on. Hits the nail right on the head, especially when we start talking about Sennacherib. I walked in that palace. It's being excavated in Nineveh today, just north of Mosul. You have the tomb of Jonah there, or it was there when I was there anyway. ISIS got a hold of it and destroyed most of it. But you have archaeological evidence that these stories of the Bible are true. And the same thing was with the civilizations. If you have ancient civilizations such as the Mayan Indians or the Incas in Peru, you can go digging, and they're digging up evidence all over the place of that civilization existing at the time as it is described in history. Same thing with the Chinese, same thing with the Egyptians, same thing with Greece. All of these ancient civilizations, there's archaeological evidence supporting their existence. We're not talking about the narrative and all the politics that go along with it. The existence of these locations is demonstrated through archaeology. Mecca doesn't have any of that. Mecca, the earliest indicator of Meccan archaeology is evidence from a 12th century Ottoman fort. That's based what I know. There may be other evidence out there of archaeological evidence out there for the existence of Mecca. If there is, prior to the 7th century, if there is, all you have to do is publish. I mean, you become an instant hero. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretend you're in Missouri. Show me. All you have to do is just publish it, and you'll be an instant hero. Now they have come. They're desperately trying to make this Makaroba reference, written on one of Ptolemy's maps in the 2nd century, saying that, well, this is Mecca right here, Makaroba. No, the etymology of the words are not the same unless you can demonstrate that they are. And the location where Ptolemy is indicating on these maps are north of Yathrib, or Medina even. So, plus they're too far eastward. So that doesn't work. But you can make that assertion, but it doesn't work when we get down to the details. And the devil is obviously in the details. No evidence, no archaeological evidence for the existence of Mecca, whether it's in writing, whether it's on a map. We went through the maps last week. There's nothing there on a map. There's nothing there in writing mentioning it. There's nothing there on the ground where people might have etched something into stone. All these pagans, they're going to Mecca. Didn't they have 360 gods? They make their annual pilgrimage. They're going to Mecca. There would be something on these stones written in earlier languages, maybe in Aramaic or Syriac or whatever the language was prior to Arabic there in that region. There's nothing there. Nobody's mentioned that they're going on a pilgrimage to Mecca. There might be mentioned they're getting the heck out of there because it's too hot and there's no water. You don't have any water. You don't have any grass. You don't have any grass. You don't have any animals. You don't have any animals. You don't have anything to eat. You don't have anything to eat. You don't have any people. You don't have any people. You don't have a civilization, and you don't have Mecca. Period.
Hey, okay, Eric.
Yep.
just to give you a Jerusalem correction. Jerusalem is listed, I just did the KJV, 767 times. That's included the New and the Old Testament. Okay? You said like 2,000 times.
Yeah.
But it's not. Yes, sir.
There's something. Check the word yom. Maybe that's what I was thinking of. Day. How many times is the word day used?
In D-A-Y?
D-A-Y.
D-A-Y? Yeah, 2263. 2,263. Okay, yes, sir.
Good catch.
Woohoo.
Fact check.
Well, we did that a while back, about 4 or 5 minutes ago, and you had me check it, and so I was like, wait a minute, buddy.
Okay. Well, yeah. See, I can't remember all that. And I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. That's quite all right.
Same here.
I would rather be right. I'm sorry. I would rather be
wrong and corrected
than lie about trying to, you just don't know what you're talking about. Maybe it's in you're not checking the ESV version or what, you know. I'm not like that. I don't mind being wrong. And my wife reminds me of that. The queen, way to go. Always keeping me honest. Okay, so debunking Muhammad. All right, where are we going with this? Here's what Muslims say about Muhammad. Muhammad was, let's go. Okay, Muhammad was well known for, let's see here, writing came before the 7th century. They say that we can know Muhammad existed because of the constitution of Medina. Muhammad wrote this in 622. How do you say that? Eshethame? Eshetanim, letters. How do you say it?
Ashtanami.
Ashtanami? Is that how you say it? Okay. He wrote it to monks in 625. The Doctrina Ikobi. Tradition track refers directly to him in 634. And the Quran refers to Muhammad four times in 652. And then the Dome of the Rock refers to Muhammad in 691. Now, all of these things are not true or they're forgeries. And here's why. Let's look at the Constitution of Medina. And I'm not going to sit here and pile all kinds of things on top of you. Number one, it's supposed to be pro-Jewish, but there's no Jewish record of it. Jews never mentioned it. There's no archaeological evidence of Jews in Medina, according to Dr. Hoyland. Now, think about this.
Wow.
Think about this. Hold on a second. This is some dangerous stuff here, because Muhammad claims, the standard Islamic narrative claims, that Muhammad, when he went to Medina, when he went to Yathrib, he was invited there to be the leader of the three Jewish tribes, the Banu Qurayza, the Banu Nadir, and the Banu Kanuka. He was supposed to be in charge. They all invited him there. Well, there's no evidence that these tribes outside of Islam, as far as I know, that these tribes existed in Medina at this time. None. Let's see here. It contradicts the Sirah and the Hadiths and their cruel treatment of Jews. The Isnads, which are those ones that are people who remember is an Isnad the one that remembers the Quran, or the ones that remember the Hadith, the chain of narration? I guess those would be Isnads, are the ones for the Hadith. Okay. For the Constitution are confused with different versions. The Quran doesn't refer to any constitution in Medina. Exactly right here. No Jew would sign a treaty which gave Muhammad the authority between man and God, which this constitution does. And it first appears in Ibn Hisham's Sirah, which is the biography of Muhammad, 200 years after the death of Muhammad. So the bottom line is Muslims shouldn't accept the treaty, as it contradicts much of what the Quran views the Jews as. Okay. So the historians, Hoyland, Andrew, consider it a fraud because there's no Jews that far south, and the only source comes from the 9th century Muslim traditions, which is the Sirah, which is too late and too far away. So this is, again, legend and folklore creeping into it. I'm going to do? Let's see.
Wait, hold on, Eric.
What
are you saying that there was no treaty, there was no treaty, there was no pact of Mecca or Medina or whatever? Okay, that's your claim. Okay,
well, that's what the scholarship is showing. I'm just repeating what scholarship is showing.
But the were Jews they there? Were they there? Because we can't know anything unless you were actually there. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. What is that?
Weird feminine hand on that document. What is that, dude? It looks like
I'm not sure. Hold on, where are we at? Is this still up? Okay, this is still on the. Okay, hold on, just a second. I'm trying to do something here. Where did it go? I just had it. Here it is. Okay, here it is. Let me unplug this here. It's not playing.
Ashtiname.
Okay, hold on.
Ashtiname. Yeah, okay, we're talking about
Islam. Ashtiname.
Yeah, that whatever that is, that is definitely a mouthful. I'm not sure.
Ashtanane.
Okay, so let's go back to the Ashtanane. This Ashtanane. This guy, I don't even want to say that because it might say asinine or something like that. I don't want to do that. Astinane letter. Okay, so this is a 6th century letter. On the right is supposedly, this was supposedly written by Muhammad or Ali. And it, let's see, this is according to the monks at St. Anthony's Monastery, promising them protection.
Muhammad or Ali? That's two big differences right there.
Well, when you think of
by it, Muhammad or
the
Ali?
16th century, when it's discovered in the 16th century. Not really, because of the time, no. The time distance between Muhammad and Ali.
They lived together, supposedly. Yeah, supposedly. Right.
Muhammad dies 632. Ali becomes caliph in what, 657 or somewhere around there. So you're only talking.
Have they tested that paper? Have they tested that paper?
I don't know. Let's see what it says. I don't think so. It has. There we go. It has historical anachronisms in there. Now, we all remember what an anachronism is, don't we? Yeah, an anachronism would be having a Samaritan help Aaron build the golden calf at Mount Sinai when people from Samaria didn't come into existence until 721 BC, and the calf at Sinai was built in, I don't know, 1500 BC. So they're only off by, what, 800 years there? Yeah, that's an anachronism. So this one is an anachronistic also. So let's make sure we understand what an anachronism is. It gets the dates of events, people, inventions. They're placed incorrectly. For an example, to say that Abraham Lincoln rode in on a limo to his inaugural address would put the limo in the wrong time period because limousines had not been invented in 1861. They were 50 years later. Well, I don't know how many years later they invented the limo, but you wouldn't have the car that early. And this is what an anachronism is.
Eric. So they found this in the 16th century. So they haven't tested that paper to see how old that paper is or whatever it's written on?
I do not know. I don't see any carbon 14 datings. I don't see any. Okay, it says it's dated 625. But the traditions say no letters were sent until 628 and only to Medina. 47 writings listed by Ibn Sa'd, 845, but the Astinani isn't mentioned. So it talks about the writings by Muhammad are not listed. Minaret is pictured. This is a big thing here. The minarets were not invented until the 11th century. That's the 1,050 or whatever. So if this is supposed to be, they were created in the 9th century, I'm sorry, but not used until the 11th century. So here you have a minaret supposedly on a document, and a minaret that's not invented until the 800s is imposed on a document that was written in the 600s. So this would be the equivalent of having an airplane on a document written in the 1600s, maybe put on like the Mayflower Compact, says, well, we came over here on an airplane instead of a boat. That's what makes it anachronistic. Okay. The Sultan is referred to, but wasn't used until the 10th century. Look at that. So if it's going to say Sultan, that title was not used for 300 years, for crying out loud. Mosque mentioned not in Egypt until 641, and this is supposed to be dated 625, so that's off. And then some other things here. So that letter falls apart. Then you have the Doctrine of Acobi, and this is a Greek polemical tract from Carthage. And is written in Palestine by a Christian apologist. If it refers to a Saracen prophet with a sword who has the keys to paradise. Saracen prophet can't say the Christ was to come. It assumes Muhammad is alive in 634. Okay, this is dated 634. Okay, so Muhammad was dead in 632, according to standard Islamic narrative. The prophet has the keys to paradise, which contradicts Islamic traditions. This prophet fits Judeo-Christian monotheistic background. Here's where this is what is leading me to believe that Muhammad is a fabrication. He's an invention of this narrative that's gone through. Everything that points towards him, because it means the praised one. He's supposed to be. It's a title. It's not a name. And he spoke Aramaic, not Arabic. So there's no reference to the name Muhammad, no reference to this prophet being a Muslim or belonging to the religion of Islam, no reference to the city of Mecca, nor the book of the Quran. He could be anybody. He sounds more like an Arab Christian employing the status of a prophet to gain himself more credibility. So that's what that looks like. The Quran itself, Muhammad isn't in the Quran, but four times. It says, let's see, there are four references to Muhammad. Let's see, the Blessed One is no more than a messenger. The Blessed One is not the father of any of your men. He's the messenger of Allah and the last of the prophets, and he believed in that which is sent down to the Blessed One. The Blessed One is the messenger of Allah. So when we look at the title, the Blessed One, that's what Muhammad means. So they most likely refer to the title, which could very well mean Jesus. So this could be, Ed, are you still here? Did he leave? I think Ed left. Because he was talking about this before in, I can't remember what it was, but where they were talking about how this developed from old Christian fables and legends, how the Quran was developed. And so it makes perfectly sense. And then lastly, the Dome of the Rock. The Dome of the Rock, I've looked at this pretty extensively. When you look at the inscriptions on the Dome of the Rock, number one, it's built in 691 by Al-Malik, the caliph from the Umayyad dynasty. And it says that the Shahada was first introduced. Okay, the Shahada is first produced by Abd al-Malik. Let's see here. There's no God but God alone, and the Blessed One is his messenger. So much like Muhammad's name in the Quran, these inscriptions don't refer to a prophet named Muhammad, but refer to the Blessed One, who could very well be Jesus. So the Quran verses and these inscriptions are not the same. As a matter of fact, let me talk about the Dome of the Rock real quick, because if there's one archaeological feature in the world today that really gets in my craw, it's the Dome of the Rock. And here's why. Because the Dome of the Rock is supposedly built on Mount Moriah. This is where Abraham went to sacrifice Ishmael. I'm kidding, Isaac. He went to sacrifice Isaac. And now you have in the same place where Jesus, and this is where they built the Jewish temple. This is the exact place where the Jewish temple stood. And now you have this monstrosity that was built, because in the inner and outer ambulatories that have not been destroyed, the original ones that have been built, it talks about the Miraj, the Muhammad's night journey. This is not a mosque. It's not a mosque. It's a shrine to Antichrist, as far as I'm concerned, because it says on these inner and outer ambulatories, say not three, Jesus was nothing more than a servant to God. He was not God. So it denies the divinity of Christ in the very same spot where Christ worshiped God the Father and the Jews worshiped God the Father in the temple. And so when you see this thing, it's just, I don't, you know, it's just, anyway, maybe I'm.
No, it's just in your face. It's everything that the Father did. Yeah, that's right. It's you're such a mockery right. In your face.
Yeah, that's exactly what he built it right there, Connie. You hit the nail right on the head with that. Right up in your face. It sits right up there, right above where the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is, where you have Golgotha and the tomb of Christ in this church. Yeah, right up in your face.
And Eric, you know where it's at? Because you can look on Google Map and see where the Olive Garden is, where Jesus is supposed to touch his feet down, right?
the Mount of Olives.
And it says it's going, there's going to be like an earthquake from east to west.
Right.
When you go towards the west, I believe it is, it goes right dead center into the Dome of the Rock. Look at it one day.
I know exactly where you're talking about. Depending on where he lands on the Mount of Olives, because the Mount of Olives and the Temple Mount run parallel to one another. There's a valley in between. The Garden of Gethsemane is down below here. And then the Temple Mount sits up here. Garden of Gethsemane is on this side of the Kidron Valley. And then up here, is the Mount of Olives. So he would land over here, cross the Kidron Valley, and come up to the Temple Mount. And depending on where you are right here on this side, where he would just travel directly. There's a gate there that they bricked over and built a cemetery, because no holy man would dare cross the cemetery on foot.
That's another in your face.
Yeah, exactly. It's a joke, is what it is. Because if you have somebody descending from heaven, are you really thinking that stepping on dead bones is going to prevent this guy from traveling anywhere? I mean, that's you got to be about as dumb as some of those guys were actually geniuses, but some of the things they did, it's just really foolish. Okay, so thus far on the Meccan mystery, we have discussed the problems with the literature and how they are way too late, and the problems with the literature, how they do not describe the traditions, accurate traditions of the early Muslims. We've looked at the archaeological evidence for Mecca and the absence of it, and how every civilization has archaeological evidence supporting it, and Mecca does not. And today we looked at the fact that the earliest Qiblas that are supposed to face Mecca, one of the key tenets of one of the five pillars that Muslims are supposed to fulfill every day, is not facing the right direction in the first century after the death of Muhammad. They're facing Petra, which is way far north, which would make a lot of sense if you line it up with what is described in the Quran, as far as the geography and the geographical place is concerned, and also in a lot of the Hadith literature, it's consistent. And tonight we've also looked at some of the manuscript, or the letters and these things, and how they're all bogus. And a lot of these are just, again, legend and lore and later developments meant to demonstrate the veracity of redacting a history back on the 7th century. So if you ever get a chance, I would highly recommend you take one of Dan J. Smith's classes. If you don't want to do that, I have mentioned that I am willing to allow you access to the folder that I have in my Google Drive where these are kept. I'll share it with you when you get in there, and you can have access to the PowerPoints. You can have access to the recordings of the classes that were done on Zoom, and you can listen to the presentations on a video MP4 videos, where we can watch these. I'd be more than happy to share that with you if you want to. I do not hoard this stuff. I believe that in the hands of more people, this gets, the easier it is going to be to defend Christianity and win more souls to Christ, which is the purpose of the show to begin with. Okay, does anybody have anything they want to add? Besides me sneezing.
Just that Islam is false, clearly, as we've just demonstrated. I mean, why you Muslims believe in this? I mean, seriously, it's not that you believe in this. It's that you'll believe anything but the truth of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, and that's seriously the sad part about it. You're absolutely right. It's just sad that
when he did everything good, he raised the dead, he spoke right, he treated the children right, he treated the women right, he did all good things, healed the leper, you know, and they think Muhammad is just this greatest thing. The truth is they can just read the Bible and see who Jesus is and come to Christ and leave this way.
They can also read the Bible and see who Muhammad is, a false prophet, a thief, a murderer.
Yes.
Everything, you know, about Muhammad is also in the Bible as well, but it's not what the Muslims would like to expect or think.
That, where's Ed when you need him?
Yeah, I don't know. Where is Ed?
Ed bailed on us. He's got another warning, I guess. I don't know.
But no.
Most Muslim countries ban the Bible. They ban the Bible, and then I'm sure that they don't read the Bible, and most Muslims don't even read their Quran because they don't know Arabic.
Well, we all know who Zakir Naik is, do we not?
Oh yes, he's the Christ.
Okay, Zakir Naik. Here's his reason for justifying the banning of the Bible in Saudi Arabia. He said that do you believe that 2 + 2 = 5? No, 2 + 2 = 5. So why would you bring in a textbook that would say 2 + 2 = 5 when we can bring in the Bible? And the Bible, if we know that 2 + 2 = 5, then we can't bring that in because it's false. So why would you bring that in? That was literally his excuse for not allowing Bible in Saudi Arabia.
And all the
we
Muslims
know it's false, so therefore it doesn't come out.
All the Muslims applaud, yeah.
Like a bunch of clapping seals, yep. All right. Anybody else got anything they want to say before we call it a night?
Don't forget to play the
I got it right here, Rad. I wouldn't forget you, brother. I got this. All right. Well, everybody, thank you for coming tonight. And we will see. I'm going to be in Kafiristan East on Sunday. So email me if you want to host the show, and we'll get you set up. I don't want you to make a decision tonight. I don't want to force you into a decision. If not, we can just have, you know, enjoy your Labor Day. It's nothing too terrible. Although I like consistency. We've been doing this for I don't know how many years now, where we have a show every Sunday or every time we possibly can.
We should, you know what? You know, for these occasions, we should put together like a greatest clip show or something, dude. You know,
that'd be work. Like,
yeah, there's so many of them, Well, no, we could bring when Muslims used to come to our show before they all got afraid and, you know, ran away. We could put together some.
They are always welcome. The only one that I will not allow on this show is the Imam from Houston. I just refuse to have him on the show. I don't, you know, I know you guys like to listen to what he says and all that, but after get there. I have forgiven him in my heart for what he's done, even if he's unapologetic of it, but I am not going to spend any.
Well, you shouldn't. I agree with that. I mean, seriously, on it. I told you for years, leave that dude alone. Don't quit inviting him to the show. You know what I mean? Did I not?
I know. You did. You're right. You did. Let's see here. I'm gonna look this up. Cooperating with political parties.
What are we looking at?
Oh, he's looking for that word. He can't remember the
word. That word, I can't remember. That's still bothering me. It's
not cooperative.
Coalition is all I can think of.
Not coalescing. No. It is
coalition.
Not co-op.
And I might even be wrong on this scene. I'm just throwing you guys.
You know what? You got to think of something else. You got to do something else and think of something else. And then when you find the word, posted in the PM, you know, private messages thing.
In
that's caucus. How I
caucus,
I just,
caucus.
I just
caucus. 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 You caucus. Get it, Red. Woohoo! Hallelujah.
Caucus. They
you
caucus with
you did
their party.
Sorry.
Oh, I feel so vindicated.
I'm glad we got that on tape. Brad, you made his day, buddy.
But you know what? Coalition and all the other words we're putting are kind of the same thing. I'm just saying. But yeah.
Okay, now I can go now. I feel so much caucusing. They caucus with one another. So that Testerman would caucus with Chucky Schumer, Dick Durbin, and all those other
commies
clowns that are in the Senate. And Muhammad Oz, even though you, whatever reasons you have, and I get it. I'm not going to.
It's the party, not the man. Him, if the man votes against the party, we can deal with it within the party.
Yeah, who would you rather have in charge of the Judiciary Committee?
The thing about Oz is, if people knew more about Islam, they wouldn't have voted for him. And the GOP, well, the they should have picked his butt out.
No, there were so many other. Just like all the candidates that Trump picked. I mean, I'm sorry. Look, if you're running for office and a Muslim starts agreeing with you and starts funding your campaign, chances are there's something wrong with your campaign. I'm just saying. Or if a Muslim agrees with your doctrine, there's something wrong with your doctrine, I should say. So, no, what you had was Trump endorsing all these candidates. I don't know what criteria he used to choose them, but because but then Democrats started supporting them because they knew it would be all about Trump and not about them. I know it was a brilliant Democrat strategy, but even the Democrats were shocked that they were doing this because they were funding all of Trump's candidates. They funded more money than the Republicans actually put towards these candidates in the primary. In a lot of cases, Dr. Oz being one of them. They really did, okay? Because they figured that we're going to get this guy, he's going to get the primary, and we can easily defeat him. Brilliant strategy, risky strategy, and it seems to be paying off. It is an unfortunate thing, but that's why these are all, except for one, there's actually Herschel Walker might be the only one, but I think there's another one doing good. But all of Trump's picks are pretty much doing horrible poll-wise in the general election. And not just horrible a few points, these are like significant problems.
Okay, the only thing they need is they need another Newt Gingrich, the contract for America.
Exactly.
And that's all they have to do is just get behind a common thing. Look, this guy voted with Biden all this time, and this is what it's created. That's all you got to do. You can Muhammad Oz, you can be, you know, whatever, and you're still going to win. All right, guys, we're going to run. I got to run. We're going to run.
Hang on, Mayor Eric.
Juice, I was going to play the clip. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Me and Ron decided that the only ones that need to be in the House and the Senate are engineers, because when things happen in the earth and things, they go to fix it. You know, they go to work. So all of the House, the Senate, even the president, they all have to be engineers.
Well, they would
so
all
that
get
when
sued,
there's a political problem,
they would all get
work.
Sued by the lawyers. They would lose it in court because they don't know how to defend themselves, so they would lose, so it doesn't help.
No, they
but
wouldn't.
I agree. That, you have that engineer mentality to fix them.
You don't think a lawyer is a good job? Like being a good storyteller? Being a masterful storyteller?
Yeah, that's what lawyers do. All right, folks, we're hauling. We'll see you. If not, we don't see you Sunday. We'll see you next Tuesday here in the Cross the Crescent discussion group.
Advanced student and specialist, that the standard narrative has holes. That's what I'm talking about.
That's all, folks.